SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Rise and shine, campers, and don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there. What is this, Miami Beach? Hardly. Wow. Wow. You got to be kidding. They're wrong. They're wrong so often. I guess you got to give them credit when they're right. The weather peoples. They said it was going to snow. Sure, it snowed, and I'm not talking a dusting. There was a good inch and a half out there. Shocking, and of course, let's see. Didn't bring gloves. Put the snow brush for the car away. I don't know, 3 weeks ago at home. Put them in the garage. Just a light coat. It's just one morning, and it'll be forgotten by tomorrow. But boy, oh boy, this was funny. It was real. I got up at, I don't know, about 4:30, and I just peeked outside, and I put a picture up on Twitter. I was like, it really did. It really snowed. Pretty funny. It made for a quiet morning here when it came to works. Obisos, for instance, put off the work. At first, Greg Foley said that he was going to work no matter what, but no, thank you. So he'll work tomorrow, and it should be free and clear by then. I mean, this racetrack, I didn't notice here in the last hour, but since I came inside and settled in. In the press center to get ready for the show, but this track dries like nowhere else, and amazing from that standpoint. They're off the turf at Keeneland today. I'll provide that immediate adviso, and got quite a bit of racing that I want to get to, but we also will spend a good portion of this hour out of the blocks with hard news. Matt Hegarty is going to join us in about 15 minutes. And Matt had about as busy a day as any trade reporter possibly could have between the Arkansas Racing Commission piece, the New Jersey legal appeal by the Jockeys Guild regarding the crop rule for the upcoming Monmouth season, and also what else? I think I think he had Laurel and Maryland in general. There's actually two or three parallel stories involving Maryland that we'll get in while we have a chance with Matt Hegarty, and we'll address all those topics soon enough. First of all, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Coming to you from Churchill Downs and moving steadily toward opening night here. That'll come Saturday. They'll draw today. In fact, all the Saturday draws coming today. And everything leading into the meet here is overshadowed by next weekend. It's coming at a steady rate, and so is some of the news and some of the back stories, including this morning, Darren Rogers, who's going to join us for the invocation. An invocation 2 years removed from the last, because we didn't get one from Darren last year. Last year was too arduous. The word came last night to Darren from Bob Baffert to put Hosier back on the list. Of course, Hosier, the good second in the Rebel, ahead of, you know, really the blah effort in the Arkansas Derby. And, you know, typically the Baffert Derby horses, you know, they come in hot out of Arkansas. And the two of them in this case, only one of them, because Concert Tour awaiting the Preakness, although he's out here, you know, he's outside working, doing, you know, during the Derby Oaks training session. But Hosier, you know, really kind of muddied up, gummed up the works in terms of the way he was tracking after the maiden win and the second in the Rebel behind Concert Tour, and then, you know, really a pretty much a non-effort, you know, last of six, beaten 20 lengths. Not a great way to come into, you would think, into Derby, but at the same time, he apparently has shown enough that the connections, and this is the, you know, the SF, Starlight, Matiket, et al. Ownership group, they see an opportunity because there is apparently a lot of indication increasingly that Dream Shake may very well bypass Derby in favor of the Pat Day Mile. That's become a steady drumbeat. So waiting for waiting decision there from the X-Line Border team and partners and Peter Erton. And of course, if that happens, the horse that's sitting 21, and it had been King Fury, but a Hosier jumps back in front of him with this news overnight and this morning. So be aware of that. Hosier, King Fury. And after that, if anything should press further down into an AE list, it would include Keep Me in Mind and then Starring in My Dreams. Those are the four horses that are poised should opportunity arise. So other than that, there wasn't a lot of fanfare and hubbub. Everybody else things seem copacetic. All right. So we'll see what else Darren's got for us in about 45 minutes or so. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, of course, with Sid this morning. And I'm going to give you a little bit of the sale news from yesterday, day one at OBS. But we'll also, you know, kind of go through some more of the specifics when Sid joins us. And it was a good day at OBS, very good day one, I think. I didn't do comps, but, you know, just sort of watching and seeing the various numbers flash up. Let me pull out that thing. I'll do that in a minute. We'll do the racing, actually, before we do the hard news. And I bring it up because I think after the show, I think I'm going to hop in the car and go to Indiana Grand. I'm going to talk to Bill Downs. We'll hear from Bill probably about, I don't know, 10:45, I'm going to guess. And we're going to go over the sequence today that is a nice opportunity. And the opportunity is a pick five carryover, 44,000. At Indiana Grand today, starting in the fifth race, starts at 4:29, and it's an approachable sequence: 7 by 7 by 8 by 8 by 10, before scratches, and it's mostly allowances. There's a couple of Indiana bred events. There's an open company maiden special where there's going to be a exceedingly heavy favorite established, who I'd completely forgotten about. Actually, there's a couple of horses, a couple of names popped up today when I was handicapping this morning. And it's funny, I had printed this out, you know, because I knew Bill would be on, but had no idea that you would have the fireworks that you had at Indiana yesterday. We looked at a couple of races with Papo late, and you needed more than sheets, more than workout reports. You needed a crystal ball. I'll mention a couple of those in a second. But as it happens, I was ready to look at the sequence anyway with Bill. So now there's added motivation. 44,000, and they went into the last thoroughbred race yesterday with a chance for a pick four carryover, which, you know, how often do you see it? And just to give you an idea of the numbers that came through in the late stages, they had another very nice day of racing, but you had Helen Pitts and Cardinal Farm with their homebred Munnings filly Chakra, almost 6-1. Then you had La Alhambra in a filly allowance, Ray Hernandez with a Danza filly, and longest shot on the board, 32-1. And I applaud, I forget who it was that tweeted to me, did you bet that horse, Alhambra? I put up a picture of the Alhambra sign from the town I enjoy so much when we're in California. Marvin Johnson with a 24-1 shot, allowance winner, Quiet Contender with Rodney Prescott. I mean, that was the seventh race. It was just bombs. And Bill Downs, after that race, said, with two races to go, with sizable fields, there's a real chance for the pick five carryover. And it was pretty much assured when Hazel Ra won the eighth race for Anthony Guida and Alex Ashard aboard at 11-1. And that pretty much locked things in. And then in the nightcap, though, the pick five was assured of a carryover, but the pick four, there were four horses, I think, covered. And the interesting thing is that an 18-1 shot in there, big if true, for Dr. Gorham and Marion, a big beast filly, big if true, and she was ridden with real confidence by Perez, and she won easy at 18-1, paid 39.20. So big balloons. The 50-cent pick three was 1,022, and somebody scooped the pool. Somebody scooped the entire pool, 42,888 in the pick four. That's what the carryover would have been, $50,000 pool, and one winner. So congratulations. The pick five, the conso, if you had four correct, $816. I mean, which is a tremendous 4 out of 5 number. And then even as if that hadn't been enough chaos in the nightcap, in the quarter horse race, Look Who's Relentless for Anthony Cunningham at 21-1. It's crazy. Basically a $2,000 50-cent pick three, and a 1,333 late double. The late double paid $1,333. So it was a free-for-all at Indiana Grand yesterday. Today seems way more formful, and I mentioned a 2-5 morning line shot for Stidham in that seventh race, the maiden special. But I'll tell you what, there's four horses in there that are coming out of sprints. And that's a formula, including the favorite. The favorite's coming out of a 5.5 furlong off the turf flop at even money. And I stretching out to a mile, I don't know. This is a horse that had a 92 buyer last May when beaten by Per Capita in the second start. I mean, crazy for a horse to run like that and get that kind of a number. and not break the maiden. Ran a 5 3/4 on Thoroughgraph and did not win. And then if you remember, this horse, they ran in the Ohio Derby as a maiden and took some money, went 9-1, off at 9-1. And it's interesting. Dean Martini, of course, won. And, you know, he's come back this year as a four-year-old and really has been pretty meh for Tom Amos. Next time we talk to Tom, and Tom's in this race with a second-time starter. This is a trickier race than it looks. And you know who else was in that Ohio Derby? South Bend, who just came back, this past weekend, right? And won Vermont. So very interesting sequence. And I think, you know, even modest budgets can take a swing at it. Gus looked at Keeneland. So you'll have on the website in the selections room, you'll have Keeneland to look at off the turf as mentioned. And actually the couple of MTOs in that allowance feature, no stake today. But Gus will have that, and I've got Indiana. So your Wednesday is going to get you going, right? I don't think there's two-year-olds today, I don't believe, right? The two-year-olds return tomorrow to Keeneland, all right? So there's a quick glance, and, you know, we got a bunch of things to start to look forward to. Thistledown's opening, and so is Belmont, of course. So tomorrow after we get, more of that as we look toward the weekend. The news portions of things, I mentioned in passing that Matt Hegarty is going to join us, so I'm not going to, do much right this second. He's only minutes away. So, in fact, in case you could almost even go ahead and reach out for Matt now. But he'll explain what went on in Arkansas yesterday. I mean, there's obvious consternation and remonstrations and hair pulling and teeth gnashing. Over Charlatan and Gamine having their wins restored in the Arkansas Derby and in the allowance. But we'll let Matt explain it. There's a lot of technical elements. The other piece that we'll do with Matt is this whip rule being essentially, at least for now, being sustained, the way in which New Jersey adopted a really the most restrictive of the whip rules so far, essentially saying you can only use the stick for safety purposes only. So I don't even know if that constitutes if a lead change fits under that definition. So we'll save that for Matt as well. All right, and also that Maryland set of Maryland news. BC, after we had gotten off the air, as I mentioned yesterday, Jenny Reese had advised us the Breeders' Cup came out with the schedule of the win and you're in, kind of restoring order to that process. Last year, it was a constant adjustment of wins and you're ins. So that was done, and as I mentioned on the sales front, we'll talk a lot with Sid and kind of go through some of the highlights or, some of the specifics, some of the stallions that I thought had, very good first days. But an $850,000 gun runner led the show. And this was one that Donato Lanny bought for Michael Lund Peterson. And, of course, Peterson has had, lots of success, speaking of Gamine, and, of course, more spirit. This was a Barry Eisenman trainee, consignee. He also had a couple of $550,000 Colts that were second and third, tied for second in terms of best fetches, and a Distorted Humor Colt, as well as a Midnight Storm. And Midnight Storm had a eye-popping first day. $550,000, and there were a lot of middle, from about 150 to 400,000, there was a nice, robust set of knockdowns. So we'll go over some of that with Sid in about an hour, give or take. Matt Hegarty joins us from the Daily Racing Form. And the only jurisprudence that Matt didn't cover yesterday came in Minnesota. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You had a busy day yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, they did have the hearing conclude yesterday into the Baffert positives. I heard you mentioned Michael Lund Peterson, you know, in your intro there. He obviously had a big day yesterday as well with getting those DQs reversed. So it was a pretty busy day. They crammed, you know, 14 hours of testimony into 2 days, and then promptly had a vote on the appeal, and it's wrapped up and probably behind everyone involved at this point. You there, Steve?
Matt, it looks like we lost Steve. I'm going to go to a commercial break while I try to reconnect with him, okay?
Okay, great.
No, I'm here. Go ahead. They dropped. It's funny. When I connected this morning when the computer hooked up just to the even to the Wi-Fi, I saw that. I thought to myself, I wonder if there's going to be issues here. The week before Derby, and this goes back years to the old ISDN days, when AT&T would be on site and they didn't have any, you know, it didn't occur to them that there was anybody here before Derby week. And so sometimes they're working on things in parts of the building you don't know. So that's where I disappeared to for a second. Matt, you were the last I heard, you talked about Michael Lund Peterson, and explain the portion of this that is the easiest part to understand.
The easiest part to understand is probably Baffert's attorneys and his contentions that even if the horse did have lidocaine in its system, or the two horses, I'm sorry, did have lidocaine in its system, that it was an inadvertent contamination, and that inadvertent contamination had absolutely no effect on the horse's performances, either good or bad. And the commission definitely seems far more interested in those two points than any of the other points that the Baffert's attorneys were throwing up at them. And you know, in the end, it appears they agreed with them that this seemed to be a very harsh punishment for what looked like to be a minor violation whose only fault, you could say, would lie under the absolute insurer rule, because, you know, even under cross-examination, Baffert had to acknowledge that, yeah, post positive, as they did their own, you know, forensic analysis of what happened, there was lidocaine in the barn. It just happened to be that lidocaine was on a medicated patch on Jimmy Barnes's back that he was fiddling with, you know, for the prior 2 days. You know, the commission kind of cut the baby in half and put two $5,000 fines on each violation, but said the DQs won't stand, and neither will the 15-day suspension.
You know, the specifics that are involved here, and you know, the public you know, immediately draws the conclusions that Baffert gets special treatment and et cetera, and you know, gets away with the most outrageous elements of you know, the rule book a series, really. I mean, it's no other way to identify them that have been, you know, dogging, and Baffert addressed it, you know, last fall, and promised, you know, to redouble efforts, etc. There are elements in here, Matt, that, you know, you and I have talked about, Alan Foreman, I've discussed it with, the RMTC and RCI, you know, elements. There's even, of course, you know, the tangential part of this involving the future, you know, the future administration of medication rules and penalty administration involving HESA. And a lot of the themes that those discussions have involved were on display here, you know, including in the testimony of Dr. Cole and, of course, Clara Fenger, who, you know, is slightly notorious for attacking the withdrawal times and threshold levels. I mean, she's been a critic for years regarding the thresholds. And then there's the whole chain of command and chain of custody of samples. There's the problem with that Truesdale lab, which were well known and have been well documented. I mean, this was really a confluence of a lot of the things that dogged the game.
Yeah, yeah. And if you take what probably simply happened, that the horses were inadvertently contaminated through this lidocaine patch or someone else with some sort of lidocaine, you know, on their fingers as they handled their horses in the barn, and the fact that this amount of lidocaine would have absolutely no impact on the horse, to listen to 14 hours of dysfunction among regulators, testing labs, contractors, subcontractors, it's really amazing how much could possibly be folded into this litigation on such a minor matter. You know, if you talk to regulators, no one's happy with the lidocaine threshold. It's based on a small study that was done 10 years ago. But because there are so few lidocaine positives out there, regulators who have, you know, a tiny amount of funds to do new studies say, well, look, the regulation is working because we don't have a whole lot of positives out there.
Right.
So incomplete science or science that isn't the best available is still on the books because everyone wants to use their resources to finding actual cheating. So, you know, the idea that you would have to go through 2 days of these hearings and all the money that was spent on attorneys and all the time, and you have to wonder to yourself, could that money and that time have been spent to tackle some of the real problems in the industry? That's the absurdity of this appeal, and it's the absurdity of the initial positive. So I think it's deflating to see this, to watch it happen. And you just hope that there's a better way forward for the racing industry at some point in time.
Well, and I don't think we're gonna visit. I mean, I guess we could at least touch on for a moment. You know, the assumption, and whenever something like this happens, you know, the chorus is, well, HESA's going to fix it. What would be different? That there's the germane question. What would be different about how this was handled? Or do we not even know yet how it would be different?
No, we don't know how it will be different. Will HESA have enough funding to establish science that will avoid cases like these? I don't know. You have to set the threshold level somewhere. We're dealing with horses. They have to be far more strictly regulated than human beings because they don't have a choice in which medications they get. There are priorities in the racing industry to finding cheaters, but you still can't throw out any of the foundation behind regulating the therapeutic medications, which is, well, we have to set a threshold to make sure that somebody isn't doing something untoward. That threshold is going to be litigated every time someone is near it and faces a penalty like they did. And in this case, you can obviously say, you know, what was the most substantial outcome of these penalties? It was taking those two horses down, the amount of purse money lost in those. So I don't know how you escape from the problem that you do have to litigate these things, and you do have to have strict regulations because horses don't have a choice. And there are people out there that are going to play games to get as little edge as they can in a race, and you're going to have regulations that prevent that.
You know, and there are, because I'm sure people, I'm sure a certain percentage of people critiquing and condemning this result didn't necessarily read your very extensive coverage, but there were a couple of things about this, most notably whether the picogram number involved here is enough to affect performance, and the conclusion is no. But even more interesting, I thought, was the suggestion that Fenger made that this wasn't even a pre-race contamination, that it was most likely a contamination that came afterward in the test barn. And that needs to be brought out. I know people are going to roll their eyes and say what they're going to say. But, if you're interested in this topic, then, read the full reportage and try to understand what, potentially could, it could have happened here.
I am shocked that someone on Twitter would comment on just a headline with that. But what wasn't brought up in a lot of the report is that there was testimony that Jimmy Barnes came to the test barn. So it didn't have to be a test barn employee. It could have been Jimmy Barnes. So that was brought up on the first day of the hearing. Lidocaine is a sticky substance. It's tested down to the picogram level. Everyone always brings up the idea of, airline pilots flying with a certain amount of cocaine, in their systems because, well, cocaine is sticky. I don't know if it's particularly a important point that the contamination could have happened in the test barn when the person who is probably the source of the contamination was in the test barn anyway.
Well, this was I was slightly surprised I did not watch the testimony the other 2 days, so I did not to see the, the specifics until your report. So, there's people that are going to, use this result for, whatever their particular, bend is and agenda. Turn our attention to New Jersey and in a situation that, we don't know necessarily, Matt, how it's going to play out on the racetrack. The Jockeys Guild is dealing, with these brush fires in terms of, the rule changes on the use of a crop. Talk about what transpired here in the appellate court.
Yeah, well, the Jockeys Guild last year filed an appeal of the New Jersey regulation to the actual New Jersey Racing Commission, which had approved it for implementation. In 2020, after the thoroughbred race meets had already run, the New Jersey Racing Commission denied that request to revisit it. So they went to the appellate court in New Jersey to pursue this civilly. They did ask the court for a preliminary injunction. Now this is 6 weeks before racing will even start at Monmouth Park. The court did deny it. They are trying to avoid what could be a public relations nightmare at Monmouth Park. The rule is so strict there. It says that the whip can only be used for reasons of safety. Jockeys have been riding horses their whole lives and doing it a certain way. We've seen how hard it is for riders to adjust in these other jurisdictions, especially California. I think the Guild is pulling out all the stops on this one just because the consequences of this rule could be so dramatic. I think it's going to be very hard for riders to keep that whip on their hip when they are in the stretch in a tough run. There's just too many habits, and so I think they are they're trying to head this off at the pass. You know, it's still another 6 weeks. The appellate court could take, you know, our arguments in this case before Monmouth starts up. But we'll have to closely watch this. I don't know how many riders are looking forward to that Monmouth meet with those restrictions in place. Now, whether or not that's good for the game, for the long-term health of the game, for the short-term health of the game, you know, I have no opinion. I just think it's going to be a very, very difficult transition for riders in that state under the new rule.
Well, and we'll see if there's, you know, further, legal wrangling involved. I mean, essentially, Terry Meeks was asking for a stay until there's further review, further.
Yeah, until the issue comes before the court. So, okay. You know, you have a lot of these, you know, temporary injunctions that are filed by organizations that are objecting to either a new rule or a law. You know, you do have to, the judge has to agree that, that certain conditions are met before granting that preliminary injunction. In this case, the court didn't see fit to grant it. Now, the court may have also been looking in the future and said, well, this is 6 weeks away. There's no immediate and present danger. So we'll have to see what the court's plans are as far as hearing the appeal.
Well, given how much legal wrangling has gone on in the past 20 years in New Jersey, and knowing between, you know, between Dennis Drazen and the legal staff that was involved in the sports betting lawsuit, and with some of the legal profession that is in the legislature in Trenton, this probably will get addressed. In the meantime, I saw Joe Bravo last night say that he'll consider riding elsewhere this season, this summer. And Papa Morales just shared with me a tweet from Antonio Gallardo, who says that he won't go back under this condition either. So it's either going to be a scenario where perhaps some young riders and some hungry up and comers try to break in and deal with what could be this this very restrictive concept, or others that are veteran will have to try to adjust and see. And it also, Matt, you would think it also depends on how the stewards watching the crop use are going to handle it. I mean, even that's going to be a new experience.
Yeah, but the rule is explicit. It says you cannot use the whip other than for reasons of safety. That's a pretty high bar. And, I don't think it's just that the jockeys are concerned about the fines or whether or not they'll be able to perform to their best of their abilities or to get their horses to perform to their best of abilities. Anytime you use the whip in New Jersey and are fined because the rule is so strict, you're going to be called a horse abuser. I mean, it's a tough spot to put riders in, given the, hundreds of thousands of years of history of using certain implements to control and to encourage a horse. It seems like it might be too much too quickly.
Yeah, as opposed to the intermediate step, three arm motions and wait for response, a total of six or eight uses of the crop, all the way around. And the underlying part of this, of course, is that this has no comprehension from a public relations standpoint. It seems that there's like no addressing or appreciation for the fact that the stick itself is now basically a foam implement that you know is not invasive on the horse. It's just a question of the arm motion and the appearance that horses are being flogged, when in fact it isn't really anything like that at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a matter of degree, obviously. I mean, if the horse didn't feel it, then why would you use it in the first place? But that is true, and that is absolutely accurate. The whips that were used 30 years ago are nothing like the whips that most people are using right now. They are far different. They definitely do not, pack as big of a punch as they did to quite a significant degree, but yeah, you do have the public perception problem, and you probably always will at this point. I don't see the world reversing from the trend it's on right now. Whether or not you can explain to people that it doesn't hurt, well, come on, it has to. The horse has to feel something. Whether it's a pat or a slap is probably something else for the lawyers.
Well, and we'll address it. Rich Migliori yesterday brought it up with Rich, and of course California. I'm sure you're following today's CHRB meeting, right?
I don't know if I will be on that call. I do have to go out to Keeneland. I got a beautiful day here for my first Keeneland trip in 18 months. There's snow on the ground, and it's in the mid-40s.
I'm in Louisville, and it was an eye opener this morning. And and then when I got to the car, I thought it was a dusting, and then I got to the car and I realized I need my snow brush, and my snow brush was home in the garage, so I had to use my hand.
I checked the weather forecast yesterday morning and completely forgot about it, and woke up this morning and just I didn't know where I had woken up.
Matt, were you? And Darren's going to join us next, and Darren Rogers, and I. And Darren wasn't here for this in 88. I think it was 88, right? In the Breeders' Cup at Churchill, and they had snow. But that was October.
Yeah, and I was in high school, so.
Oh, zing! that took me out at the knees. That was brutal. We'll let Tony address this again tomorrow, and we'll see what happens at CHRB. A couple other quick stories, Matt. Before I ask you, you mentioned Arizona, and I do want to bring something up while I've got you in a minute. But you had a hatful of things you're covering the last 10 days particularly, and that includes what's been a very difficult few weeks in Maryland. The renovation need and, pulling up the cushion to look at the base and make sure to address any fissures in the base and so forth at Laurel. Luckily, they've got Pimlico, as a backup. They're going to switch over there. They had I saw some restrictions overnight that were sent out to a horseman regarding EHV1 passports for the horses to come onto the grounds in Maryland. And then there's actually some good news that went underreported, which is that the racetracks in Maryland are going to be part of sports betting in Maryland.
Yeah, I know that story got very little, very little publicity. Yep. I know I wrote the story on the same day that I was writing a story about the track problems. So maybe that, served to shroud the other story. But yeah. The licensing fees are pretty steep. It's $1 million for the Maryland Jockey Club, which would allow them two parlors at Laurel and Pimlico, or a parlor each, sorry. And then the four OTBs would also be able to get licenses. They've had so much going on in Maryland, and they're dealing with the the long-term plans there as far as tearing down Laurel and Pimlico and replacing them. That anyone I talked to, on the day after those things were passed, was just kind of like, look, we're going to have to figure all this out later. But yeah, it's good news in the sense that the Maryland tracks will have this the ability to take sports bets, at least be able to do the same thing that other casinos and sports facilities in Maryland will be able to do. There's also the 60 licenses, that's 60, available to mobile operators. Everyone knows that, you know, the sports betting is going to thrive most particularly in the mobile market. Will the companies that get the land-based licenses also be able to bid on mobile? With 60 of them out there, I assume that they will. So you would hope that the racing industry does the smart thing and gets those mobile licenses and then pairs that with the racing product. You saw during the pandemic that there were insane growth rates for the account wagering companies, and the one operated by the parent company of TVG actually got 50,000 of their sports betting customers to place a bet on wagering during the pandemic. So, you know, having those products offered alongside the horse racing products, that's the racing industry's best path forward. So you hope that the racing industry does put together some sort of package where racing is not on a separate island from those other sports betting offerings.
Well, and on that topic, there's been you know, quite a bit of conversation, you know, especially with Derby on the horizon, 10 days away, and a couple of places, Matt, and I'm kind of throwing this at you, and I didn't suggest it when I reached out for you for a visit, but what if anything are you hearing regarding the Derby availability as a signal in Las Vegas? The Nevada system is a little convoluted, and you know, the Churchill properties have not been on wagering menus in any of the sports books, and I'm just wondering if you've got any feel for, you know, where that stands, or if there'll be any movement.
Yeah, and this dispute goes back, from what I'm trying to think, at least a year. So there haven't been Churchill properties up in the Vegas sportsbook for at least that time. I hope I'm not wrong on the timeline. I believe it's been at least a year. The NPA, Nevada Paramutual Association, has drawn a line in the sand on this. They say that they shouldn't have to pay for the premium of the Churchill signal, especially the Derby signal, because their business model, which they say includes, you know, free drinks and free programs and things like that, doesn't allow them to pay those premium fees like other simulcast buyers do. So how much do those casinos, you know, really lose in not being able to have that Derby party every year? I don't know if those are big deals anymore. I wouldn't be optimistic that there's going to be some sort of resolution to that anytime soon. I haven't heard any movement on it. And the last time I checked would have been 3 or 4 weeks ago. It just seemed like the Vegas casinos were fine paying discount rates for all the other signals they do get, and weren't particularly enthusiastic about potentially driving up the rates for all their other signals by making an exception for Churchill and the Derby.
Well, and one of the things I happened to notice that, you know, related to this was, I think Chuck Simon actually found a piece that from a gambling journal that any new properties and any new sports books that have been opening are not making any in Vegas, are not making any accommodation for racing offerings, and that's problematic. I mean that the racing isn't even up on the screens, and that you know, the tellers aren't even in position to take racing action. That not good. And a serious, you know, it's a gigantic negative.
Yeah, but, you know, the world is changing. I'm sure that the new casino properties aren't building sports books that are as large as they used to be either.
That's fair. Although, yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Yeah, it's not a good idea. You know, growing up in Arizona, you know, my brothers and I and friends would drive up to Las Vegas and you know, spend the whole day in the race book, you know, having a lot of fun with a lot of people who are racing people. But the last time I was there, you know, 10 or 11 years ago, the race book wasn't what it used to be. It really wasn't. I think actually someone tried to charge me for a drink. And I said, hey, I'm going to be here all day, so why don't you make that first one free and keep them coming? So you know, the world is changing. It's becoming more remote. You know, I'm sure that there are race books that will survive because they will, you know, draw the customers that can't find race books anywhere else. But I agree with you. It's not a great thing. So
finally, Matt Hegarty with us from the Forum and headed today to Keeneland. Matt, you mentioned Arizona, and I haven't had Mike Weiss and I have not been able to connect to talk about the you know, his accepting the general manager role at Arizona Downs and what he's hoping to achieve at Prescott. But what can you tell us about where things stand in Arizona regarding Signal?
Yeah, Arizona racetracks, especially Arizona Downs, has made a big push during this legislative session to get authorization for the instant racing, historical horse racing machines, whatever you want to call them. You know, it doesn't look like there's any traction in the legislature for that. Arizona Downs will almost certainly, you know, run its meet this year up in Prescott, but whether or not they are interested in running beyond that without some sort of authorization to offer, you know, gambling products that would compete with all the casinos that are littered throughout the state, I just don't know. So, you know, we have been told that Arizona Downs will race. Obviously, that's a good thing. I just don't know what their long-term future is going to be without any kind of additional help.
Well, and they're also the you know, the Monarch group Signal there has been problematic.
Yeah, as far as bringing in, you know, my parents still live there. My dad can't, you know, bet on any Monarch signals, which is entirely frustrating to him. But that's not even the worst part. I mean, he has to call a live teller and wait
right.
to talk to a live
right.
teller to put a bet in. I mean, the legislature there has shown that it doesn't really care. I don't even, you know, I'm not even talking about historical horse racing. You have to make a separate political case for that, separate political and economic case. But the idea that there are 50-some OTBs at little bars and restaurants throughout the state, and yet there are restrictions on what you can do on your phone is somewhat ridiculous. And that's just because the Native American casinos have far more political sway in the legislature, and they've been very adept at not making it convenient for people to bet at home.
I wanted to get those in while I had you, Matt. I appreciate you addressing both of those topics. And as always, Matt Hegarty, when Matt gets busy, he's very busy. And I appreciate all the summarizing of the news of the day. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Steve.
Always great. Absolutely. Matt Hegarty, everybody. DRF Hegarty. And it was crazy yesterday. I mean, every 15 minutes there was another alert that had Matt's byline on it. I appreciate it. Darren Rogers is standing by, and we're going to get Darren, I think, to sit down. There he is. Here he comes back, and so I won't take a break until after we have the always anticipated, always fabulous invocation that it's in the tradition of gentlemen start your engines, and after last year's
preoccupation?
Yes. After last year's difficulties where we tabled it, I guess you can only invoke in April. Maybe that's what the rule should be.
I say we only invoke if we have true fans in attendance.
That's not bad either.
We had participants only. We had some media, about 1,500 people here at last year's Derby. It was, it was bizarre. It was strange. It was, I think Baffert said it best when it nothing about it felt like Derby until they sprung those gates open. It's easy to say when you leave
when you
from
win.
Gate to wire, yeah. And you win, but I echoed that. I mean, even the 1,500 that were here, it was a loud 1,500, exciting 2 minutes, but I'm just so delighted to be able to. For us to be able to welcome back guests, albeit a limited capacity, but it's going to feel it's feeling like Derby here in Louisville a little bit.
Yeah, and got here Saturday. Thunder over Louisville was spectacular, actually.
Versions of it, yep.
It was pretty crazy. They did multiple locations.
Pop-ups, people in advance.
It was nuts. Although some detectives got some permit applications they figured out. I give people a lot of credit for that.
They should. I mean, that's what good journalists do. They're going to look at permits. Now, I would just say this. If we were running it, we would have filed in about 20 different locations.
Ooh,
just in case to keep people off
the scent.
But yes, we're very familiar with filing public information and people finding out.
It's amazing. Andy Serling is going to come to Derby for the first time. He's been here for Breeders' Cup.
I didn't realize he's never been here for a Derby.
Well, I had forgotten that, and I just because I picked him up at the airport the last time he was here, and delivered him downtown. Anybody that's ever heard Andy's story regarding renting a car and driving from Mobile to or from Memphis to Hot Springs, when he would drive from the city up to Saratoga the deer had to be rounded up and kept away from the road. He's like a magnet for when Andy's driving. But
we've got some critters here. He can run into.
There's a flock of guinea fowl that are outside the hotel.
Sure.
Just squawking, and somebody's got a rooster in the neighborhood, and the rooster's confused.
Well, that's why you got the good hotel rate.
Exactly. I mean, right. You're not wrong. But I said to Andy, you're not going to recognize the place. Yeah, he's not going to recognize the building.
When's the last time he was here?
I think for the Breeders' Cup, it had to be when the back-to-back Breeders' Cups.
2010 and 2011. Yeah, we've had a lot of changes since then.
Well, but even I was stunned because Baby Grand, I saw where they've built up above the picnic area with suites. I was like, oh my God.
We've poured in
crazy
hundreds of millions of dollars. In fact, I believe since, if you take into consideration, you know, the Jockey Club suites and the clubhouse that was rebuilt in the early 2000s. I would have to say our capital investments are about $750 million this century. You know, in the last 15 to 20 years here at Churchill Downs, and we just it's all about respecting the history, but bringing this place up to speed with modern amenities. And anything that we've done, that we've touched, you'll notice the history incorporated into it, and stylistically.
Absolutely.
It's been great. I think the fans, one thing they'll notice this year, if you're coming on hand near the paddock grill has been expanded, and it has more, you know, windows, transactions.
Oh, up above.
Much like you have on the ground floor.
Where do you mean?
Right on the paddock grill, right near the Aristides statue and the Pat Day statue. Place of activity for a lot of people that come out here, not only for Derby Week, but most of the year. And it's really nice. It's really well done. And, it'll be especially effective for this year's Derby ticket packages that are, you know, including all the food and drink.
That's right.
That's on Thurby, Oaks, and Derby. Everything's going to be all-inclusive pricing. And if I didn't work here, I think I would be one of the customers that would break the place. You know, like, for example, if any of your listeners are out there thinking about making a last minute move here, you know, let's talk about where we are. I'm sure you want to ask that, and you'll get to it. And we've kind of said all along since last fall that we intended to have a Derby around 40 to 50% reserve seating capacity. On a, you know, a normal Derby, we would have somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 reserve seats when we built out, temporary structures, et cetera. So just do the math there. That puts us at, 25 to 30,000 guests. The advantage that we have this year, where last year, remember, we were intending to have some folks attend the Derby, but we had to pull the plug. Gosh, I want to say it was 9 days out.
Mm.
It was under 2 weeks.
Yep.
But, you know, we had sold all the tickets in advance, and then we had to do refunds and trying to see who wanted them and who didn't, who was going to defer.
That's right, defer
to the following year,
right,
et cetera. So this year we started out with 40 to 50% capacity. We're able to identify the ticket holders, that first and foremost our membership patrons, the people that own box seats, maybe turf club members, etc. Then we also went to the folks that had deferred from 2020 to 2021. Saw who was involved. Obviously, we hold a number of tickets back to accommodate the horsemen that are running their horses here at Churchill Downs on Derby Week, especially the two big days. So when that's all said and done, we have some ticket inventory that's become open, and we have some first and second floor grandstand seats. Rather than build out infield suites this year, that just didn't make any sense in a pandemic. We utilize that space, and we're doing some on the inside finish about the eighth pole, some reserved infield box seats of six. Now, it's uncovered, so let's hope we have good weather on Oaks and Derby Day. But that's part of the all-inclusive package. They'll be, kind of cordoned off from the other folks in the infield, and they will be able to come over to the front side. I love that seating option because one of my personal favorites every year is, I have to manage the Kentucky Derby Winner's Circle out near the pagoda, and I'm out there before the horses come onto the track for the race, and when they play My Old Kentucky Home, the entire grandstand sings to you. So those folks that have the infield box seats of six, they'll have a unique inside finish perspective. They'll be looking at the grandstand and the twin spires the entire time, and they'll be serenaded as the horses come on the track. I think it's a great seating option. And then around the first turn, we're building out grandstand bleacher seats that are uncovered. Think of going to a high school football game. But if you go there, you can buy those seats separately. You don't have to buy a two-day package. So, for example, you can get a Derby ticket for $417. Again, all the food and drink, including alcohol. or you can come out on Oaks Day for $183. We also made the decision a couple of weeks ago to move forward with the general admission in the infield only. These folks will not be able to come over to the front side. You have to stay in the infield. You can bring your blanket, your chairs, etc. And we're going to be at a 25 to 30% capacity. Back in 2015, when we had the record 170,000 fans in attendance, we had about 60,000 people into that infield. So if you do the math, we'll be up to, about 15 to 18,000 people in the infield. It's 22 acres. There's a mathematical formula that spreads it out, and it was approved last year for Kentucky Kingdom. It's 36 square feet of available space for personal space per individual. So with all the room out there, we think it's going to be done safely. The numbers here in Kentucky, we have a very low positivity rate. More than half of the Kentucky population has already received their first dose of vaccination. We're going to continue, as we have since the middle of last May, operate responsibly and follow the CDC guidelines. We've had great discussions with the state and local public health officials. Masks will be required at this year's Derby. You obviously can take it off when you're actively consuming food and beverage. And then we're going to ask people to socially distance. And we think we are going to be able to do that with no general admission on the front side, no walk-arounds. I think it's going to be a very pleasurable and comfortable experience for the people that have those reserved seats. I think the most important thing for us, Steve, with having in the neighborhood of 40,000 guests on hand for this year's Derby in our massive 190-acre facility, most of which is outdoors, This is a bucket list type event. And the 40,000 people that are going to be here are going to want to have fun. And we intend this to be a fun and celebratory Derby, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it just the fact that it's the first Saturday in May. Mm-hmm. If you were creating a checklist of how do we make this what it's supposed to be.
Well, I can tell you internally that was
first
number
thing.
One.
It was making sure it was on the first Saturday.
We were unable to run it on the first Saturday in May. We had no options.
No.
We couldn't get our horses here.
No.
It wasn't until May the 16th that the governor's office approved a plan horses back into the stable. And actually, I said May the 16th was our first day of racing, but I believe the first day of the horses allowed to ship in was May 10th or May 11th.
Something like that.
I want to say it was five days.
Yep.
Before we began running, and we had to phase them in from the different locales. I mean, that seems like 100 years ago, but it also seems like yesterday. But to think that's where we were last May, that was first and foremost. I mean, people know us for running on the first Saturday in May. People around the country expect it, and we're ready to do it. Look forward to it.
Well,
of course, this year, we have 16 weeks less of planning for a Derby.
That was my follow-up, which
is
how different, was it, you had the extra time, but the extra time leading to September, that wasn't extra time. That was a daily evaluation of what, where do we stand today? 24 hours later, every single day was there.
Yeah.
And you also had a backdrop in the community that added to the difficulties and the concerns about executing a giant event no matter who was going to be here.
Yeah, it was very challenging. And the one thing that we have in our to our advantage is a lot of the things that we're doing here at Churchill Downs are things that we intended to do while hosting fans last September. You know, for example, when you come through the admission gates, it's going to be every other gate. Same thing with betting windows. How's that going to work? Well, obviously, we're going to encourage folks to utilize their mobile wagering devices and wager via TwinSpires.com. But for those that like to bet in person with mutual tellers or self-serve machines, every other one will be operated. And there's, you know, much like you would go into a grocery store, there are decals located on the floor,
right,
indicating where people should stand, and any traffic flow point, you know, directional signage. We'll have a safety compliance team in place of more than 100 individuals located in the infield, located throughout the grandstand, just monitoring, kindly reminding folks to put your mask on. You know, people will receive warnings. But if you have, you know, repeat violators or anybody that just refuses to comply, they're going to be subject to ejection. You know, we're going to do this responsibly. We're going to do it safely. But, you know, going back to your point, yeah, we lost 16 weeks of kind of internal planning between derbies. And then, of course, we have the May 1st Derby, which comes up.
That's right. The earliest, earliest possible. Good point.
It has really come up on fast on us. And I, you know, I can tell you, I'm behind the eight ball in so many things internally. You know, from you haven't received an approved credential yet, you're going to be good to go. But if I sent you the invite, you're going to get it. You know, we've got we're going to have about 60% occupancy of the media center,
which is what
media centers are great. Well,
three, four times what you had in September.
Oh yeah. We had about 400 members of the media, and we're going to have probably between 1,000 and 1,200 members of the media present. We're typically at 2,200. So yeah, we had to, you know, make some unfortunate calls. You know, were people going to be left out, but everybody's understanding with what we're dealing with, but at the same time, everybody's getting ready to get back to normal.
Yeah.
Right. They're feeling more comfortable. They've, I can't tell you how many emails I've received that mentioned I'm fully vaccinated. That really doesn't come into play, but
And that's a great question. I mean, that wasn't something that you considered, you know, because plenty of sports venues, I mean, most notably,
sure.
I had this conversation with Pat McKenna last week. The Buffalo Bills and Buffalo Sabres said anybody with the New York Excelsior pass, mm-hmm. if there were 17,000 that wanted to come see the Sabres and mm-hmm. 70,000 to come see the Bills, they could all come in if they've got, you know, if they're fully vaccinated.
Yeah,
some people took that approach.
Yeah, we encourage it. And by the way, we had a great partnership with Norton Healthcare.
That's right.
Where we vaccinated 1,200 individuals within this last month. Of the entire backstretch, our full-time employees here, as well as members of our community here in the neighborhood, the surrounding neighborhood, we invited them to come over. The backside got the one shot, one and done, because of the uncertainty of travel.
Yeah.
And then we've had either Pfizer or Moderna shots here on the front side. Tomorrow's my big 14th day of being in the clear of my second shot.
Not good. Well, you're right. Tremendous.
And so, you know, we're encouraging everybody to get vaccinated. You know, to require vaccination cards, logistically, there are a lot of challenges there. And I'll be honest with you, as someone who was getting ready to celebrate my 50th birthday, it's not that long ago that I remember creating my fake IDs in college of, you know, before I turned 21, Jeff William Baker was my alias. But anyway, if you can, I would just say this. I don't think it would be too difficult to replicate any of those.
That's a good point, actually.
Are a dime a dozen. They're not even laminated. They're little cards that they hand to you. So, you know, just from a logistical standpoint, ideally it sounds great, but realistically it's no. Yeah. And look, if you're not feeling well,
stay home.
Stay home. Exactly. If you're not comfortable being around 40,000 people,
wait till next year.
Watch it on NBC. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
yeah, modern or you know, logical thinking should should reign here. And other, I mean, before we talk racing and some of the the more enjoyable elements, any advisories for people making their way here? We start Saturday and
start Saturday night. You know, it's going to be. We're trying to make this as business as usual this year. Saturday night is opening night. We have a great partnership with Fund for the Arts locally, a great organization in town that celebrates many artists within our community. You know, in a normal year, we would have the plaza stage right adjacent to the paddock with performances throughout the day on that stage. We're still going to have performances, except what we're going to do is we're going to redirect those to the Kentucky Derby winner's presentation stand at the Pagoda, where Steve Buntelman and he usually comes out and blows the call to the post. All performances that you may see on Derby Week will emanate from that stage. People that have their reserved seats, they'll be able to watch and see, you know, front and center. So we're trying to, you know, incorporate that. Tuesday is Champions Day. I'm really looking forward to that because this year's Champions Day, you mentioned that last year, we had, some social unrest that we were dealing with in the community. And, you know, we sent out a message to the community how important it was for us, you know, to acknowledge and recognize racial injustice over a number of years, especially in our industry. When you look at, 15 of the first 28 Kentucky Derbies were won by African-American jockeys. 13 of the 15 jockeys in the first Derby were black. And then the Jim Crow laws came around in the early 1900s, and that forced out a lot of people of color from horse racing. And we need to do a better job of trying to get them, because the thing that I hear from my friends in particular, it's very challenging to, you know, fall in love with a sport or get interested in a sport when people don't look and talk like you. And it's great to see Kendrick Carmouche get the opportunity. He'll be the first black jockey to compete in the Derby since 2013 when Kevin Krieger rode Golden Sense. But anyway, going to Champions Day on Tuesday, we've rebranded that day Champions for Change, celebrating black horsemen and thoroughbred racing. We've partnered with the Ed Brown Society, the Legacy Equine Academy, as well as PFAT, the Project to Preserve African-American Turf History, Phoenix Rising. Obviously, we've committed a large financial contribution to the Kentucky Derby Museum. Anybody that comes into town for Derby Week, they have a wonderful African-American jockey history tribute that is absolutely fabulous. It's very proud of it, and it's great to see. There's going to be a poster giveaway and the artist signing, and it's a great poster that celebrates the African-American jockeys, some of the best of all time, including William Walker, and of course we salute him on opening night with a stakes race in his honor, the Billy Walker,
which was introduced
about 3 years ago.
Yeah, before the awareness was even, as acute as it is and should be.
And long overdue, we did the Isaac Murphy, which will be run on Champions Day. So we renamed the Champions Day Marathon the Isaac Murphy Marathon. He's one of the great. If you don't know the history of Isaac Murphy, there's no concrete evidence or statistical data, but believed to, win at a 44% win clip in his career.
Insane number.
There have been other races. You know, we've always tried to stay away from naming races after other horses or individuals where the race already exists in another track. We know that there's other Isaac Murphys.
I think Chicago had one.
But it was very important to us. And Isaac Murphy's only the seventh individual at Churchill Downs. It's a unique group that have a stakes race named in his honor.
Wow. I've never really thought about that. Yeah, about the amount.
You've got the Stephen Foster, the Matt Wynn, the Walker, William Walker, Isaac Murphy. Of course, in recent years, we had to celebrate Pat Day as well as Wayne
Pat
Lucas
Day,
with the Lucas Classic,
and Clark,
and then of course the Clark.
You know, and I want to slip one thing in. For those that have never read W.H.P. Robertson's The History of Thoroughbred Racing in America, there was not a conscious effort in 1908 to 1910 to push the black trainers and riders out of the game. Something conspired against them that was not in their control and anybody's control. And that was the gambling blackout. Racing.
Yeah, but I could tell you. Hold on, I'm going to tell you something a little differently, though. Maybe it's covered in the book, but I can tell you, Jimmy Wingfield is the last African American jockey to win the Derby in 1902 on Allen and Dale. And those that know the history of Jimmy Wingfield, he left America to go ride. I believe it was
Moscow.
And then France.
Yeah.
And in 1902, when he won the Derby on Allen and Dale, there were white jockeys that conspired to try to put the black jockeys over the fence.
That's interesting.
I read the Wink book. You've seen the old, you know, like the whenever you see like the movie Seabiscuit,
yeah,
for example,
sure.
when the, you know there's rough riding going on, and there were no cameras back then for you had patrol judges from time to time, but it was really rough. They forced a lot of people, and so for him to win that Derby in 1902, and I believe he won it back to back years.
That might be right.
You know that was one of the things that led him to shift his tack overseas
to Europe. In 1908, when the gambling blackout occurred, racing was only occurring in two states in America, Maryland and Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Everybody and that
didn't
made
help.
It very hard at that point. And a lot of horsemen, particularly, and riders went to Mexico. They went to Europe, and there were a lot of things. And then from that point, it's hard to break back in when racing resumed in 1911 around the country. Those doors suddenly were locked. Yeah, it's an amazing story. I'll go back and read Wink again. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then we've got Thurby, right? Thurby's going to be fun here at the track.
When do we have Werby? We need Werby.
We need something on Wednesday. I can tell you that. I hate skipping over Wednesday. The only thing I say about Wednesday, you got the great, you know, and I say this, anybody that comes on hand, especially the locals here, you come out to the track on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thurby, you often get to see the horses that are participating in the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby school in the paddock between races. They're coming over for their final preparations. You get to see them up close. How about, did you see what we did this year, Steve? And if you noticed below, this is something I love this. Trying to make our sport more accessible to everyone. The barn area is still pretty much on lockdown and limited to essential personnel. So it's going to be the trainers, the farriers, the veterinarians, et cetera. We are allowing each trainer to give their owners a select number of guest passes based on the number of stalls they have. And then we're allowing the media back there this year. We think they're essential personnel to gather and tell the stories of our participants. So you're not going to see that normal party scene that we have come to know on Derby week and especially Oaks and Derby days in the barn area. But it was very important for us to be able to get fans interested and participating. So when the Derby and Oaks morning workout started last Saturday, we are inviting fans to come out free of charge, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. through Wednesday of Derby week. They can come out here, watch these Oaks and Derby horses train from 7:30 to 7:45. That's the exclusive training window. And that first day we did it, we had 400 people.
Yeah.
I was surprised. We thought we would, you know, maybe there'd be 50 people on the first day you do it. You knew as you get closer to Derby, more people would get involved. We get to Derby week, we think those crowd sizes will increase. But everybody is loving it. We've had around 400 people each day. Today was probably a little less, probably in the neighborhood of 100 with the weather. Yeah. But as we get to these important breezes that are going to be taking place on Friday and Saturday in particular, we think these this is a great opportunity for fans to come out free of charge. So if you're in the area, know that you can come watch these horses train. And that's a tradition that is going to continue in the future.
Nice. And I noticed right away on Sunday morning that there was a pronounced crowd.
It was great.
Yeah, I tried to take a picture. It really didn't do it justice. I tried to take an angle, but I could tell that there was a robust crowd that had come on. And as Mike Welsh laid out yesterday, Friday and Saturday, and the weather should be clear. It seems like we're in good shape the rest of the way.
Well,
so,
you know, my mother, bless her heart, she tried to give me an early Derby forecast last night at dinner at my son's baseball game. And I said, Mom, no, I don't want to hear it. I've lived here long enough that I don't look at the weather until about 2-3 days out.
Yeah, well, Tuesday, just, Wednesday.
I'll come talk to me then. I might look at Saturday night's forecast, but I'm not looking at next week just yet. But knock on wood, we can get some great weather for a great event.
Well, it looks like it's actually going to get in the 80s next week too. So it'll be seasonal. And now the most important question, and I'm going to present to you a theory that since the modern era and since the big board, the Darren Rogers big board, where all the horses would be kept on the whiteboard and you would do all the handwriting.
Yeah, yeah.
Since it's disappeared, your certainty, your Derby feel has really diminished. I don't
know. No, it hasn't. I just don't have a whiteboard. I got my own little spreadsheet.
It's not the same. It's not
you
the same.
You want to see the whiteboard in the office? No, I don't need that.
The big board. The big board.
I keep it electronically now.
I know. You've joined an era that's a new era. Well, let's.
So what are you saying? What do you?
I don't know.
I'm not into it?
I basically have confined my Rogers household selection co-opting to Davis.
Well, I don't blame him. Well,
whoever Davis picks, because if you don't like Davis's pick, you don't like money.
That's exactly right. Where do you think Davis gets his picks, by the way?
He
gets them from his dad.
All right. He's never said that. Well, I'll ask him next week. Next on Thurby, we will hear from Davis. It's a great tradition. And actually, I will put a picture side by side. I think I've got the first picture of Davis.
You won't believe when you see it.
When he was a kind of a smiley.
My gosh, he was probably 4 years old
Five,
he's 15 now, a freshman in high school. And I'm just going to warn your listeners, there's no telling what might come out of that kid's mouth next week. I can't promise anything.
Oh, too great. So
great.
There is
no telling. But, yes, that tradition is continuing, by the way. He's already asked,
of course,
am I allowed back at
Thurby?
Because he couldn't come last year.
Well, no, yeah. Listen, nobody was allowed, essentially. What do you think? What who have you been tracking? And, obviously, this field has morphed in the last 3 weeks.
And it's going to continue to evolve. You probably saw the tweet. I got a text last night from Baffert. He says, don't rule out
Hosier
just yet. And, Dream Shake, he's considering a run in the Pat Day Mile or the Derby. Who knows? There's always going to be an annual tradition of some unexpected rumblings. I was talking with a couple of colleagues yesterday, and this Derby feels a lot like 2008 to me. That was Big Brown and everybody else.
Hmm.
And, you know, we were talking about, you know, what kind of odds do you think we're going to get on essential quality when it's all said and done? And, you know, typically when you have a 20-horse field, which we will have, there are horses and other horsemen that want to run well below the allotted 20, that you typically have a favorite in the neighborhood of 4-1, right? And if it's a totally wide open group where they don't know who to make favorite, it can drift close to 6. I really believe essential quality is probably going to go off in the neighborhood of 5-2, maybe 3-1, maybe.
3-1 seems to be the number that's being quoted regularly now.
I don't think you can have a consensus second choice. I think I know who, you know, obviously, you know, Rock Your World's going to take money. Hot Rod Charlie's going to take some money.
Known Agenda.
Known Agenda will take money because of Todd, Highly Motivated. But you're all talking in the 6-8 to 10-1 range,
exactly.
Probably on
yep.
those horses.
Yep.
I really believe that essential quality is going to emerge as a clear-cut favorite. And he's deserving. I mean, look, here's a horse that's 5-5. He's won over multiple tracks. He's won in the slop and on the dirt. He's not pace dependent. You know, he's very handy. And he's the champion. You've got, in order to win the Derby, you've got to run through him. Now, if you're going to nitpick anything, look, he's a Tappet. You know, do the Tappets have a mind to adjust to those? You know, they can be a handful at times. He doesn't appear to have.
No.
He seems to
polished.
Be a calm, cool customer.
Yep.
Is he extended at a 1 1/8? Have they reached the bottom? Maybe. I don't know. But at the same time, you've got to run through him. I'm going to keep a close eye on, you know, Rock Your World was uber impressive, and he's obviously got a little grass in the pedigree. Those horses like the Derby. I think Hot Rod Charlie's been underrated all along. I think it's going to be a fun Derby, but it might just be like 2008, where it ends up being essential quality and everybody else.
You know, the difference, there's a couple different derbies that are being invoked to this point. I think the only difference with him is that he doesn't have as glossy. Well, I take that back. He does have a glossy resume, considering that he's the juvenile champion.
He's got the resume, but he didn't have the wow factor.
Exactly. He doesn't. He's not.
Know,
he hasn't
Big
been
Brown
as dominant.
Had the wow
yep. He
you
hasn't
know,
been
I,
dominant.
I will agree with that, but he gets the job done.
Yeah, he does get the job done. And
what would David say? If you don't like essential quality, you don't like winning.
Well, exactly. We'll see. No, we'll see. Maybe he'll. Maybe he's
I
got.
I don't know what he's going to do. Who knows?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, you don't know.
You'll be watching the live stream on KentuckyDerby.com, 7 to 8 a.m. I'm sure he'll. You know, he'll take a brief break from his Xbox to watch those videos. And he'll come up with a horse or two.
We did get the Caddo River news yesterday. Went a long way to
in the pace.
Yeah, and it really helped because it opens things up to the point where you know those that were going to be midfield and further behind, they're going to get at least an honest. I mean, the Derby pace is always faster than it looks on paper, but just because there's horses that are looking positionally, they're going to have to use their speed to find a place, mm-hmm. you know, past the stands the first time. Getting Caddo in here, though, really helps stretch things out down the stretch the first time, and it'll open things up. It's good for the whole field.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, there are horses that I anticipate will go. Look, I want to temper all that enthusiasm until we do the draw because I'm a big inside outside speed type of handicapper for trips and et cetera. But, you know, one, it's easy to surmise, you know, Rock Your World's going to go. I would think, Hot Rod Charlie, he's a little bit like essential quality, versatile, not pace dependent. But I would think he'd be forwardly placed. But look, I totally believe that it's going to be a fun start, fun race, and we'll see how it pans out once we get to after the draw.
Well, and you know,
and the draw, by the way, for
those
wondering,
specifics. Go ahead.
The Oaks draw is on Monday at 11 a.m. as usual. You can stream it. It's in the Aristides Lounge,
okay.
On the second floor, and that'll be streamed on KentuckyDerby.com. I think it's 10:45 to 11:45. And then on Tuesday at 11 a.m., that's when the Kentucky Derby draw will start. I know Fox Sports America Day at the Races will be televising that. Forgive me off the top of my head. I don't know if it's on FS1 or FS2 at the moment, but they'll be doing an hour-long broadcast. Jonathan Kinchin and Gary Stevens will be on hand, on site, and you can watch it there or you can watch it streamed on KentuckyDerby.com and numerous other outlets.
Well, and in fact, the opening night is going to be...
We got a draw.
Well, straight on opening night, it's going to be on Fox on America's Day at the Races.
Oh yeah, yeah,
all
yeah.
night long.
Oh yeah, that partnership we started with Naira and Fox Sports is outstanding. I just love that, you know, almost every race every day, it works to be. Oh, I want to say about 90% of the action is televised live on Fox Sports,
yep,
1 or Fox Sports 2, and they do a fabulous job, and we do a nice coordinating of post times to program it nicely for the viewer, and it's a great place to watch it.
It's great to be here. Darren Rogers, the invocation, and...
we can officially start. You're here.
I
know when you show up 2 weeks out, it's like my holy bleep moment.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's here.
I got to do this.
X, Y, and Z, and I'm just behind the eight ball this year. I mean, I really am.
Well,
but you know what? I've had a great mental escape for the last... My son, he's playing high school baseball. He's had a couple of games earlier this week at 5 o'clock, and I've been able to sneak over there and watch the games from 5 to 7. And I'd say watching him play baseball is about the only way I can get 2 hours of not thinking about everything Derby-related. And it was a nice mental escape. Unfortunately, he doesn't have any more games this week.
So now
I'm 24/7.
All right. Well, you look relaxed and
it's all good.
At ease. And,
it's all good. Yeah. We're going to take care of everybody, and I think it's going to be a great customer experience for those on hand, and it's going to be a fun derby. We always say every derby is special. Some are more special than others, but this will be a special derby.
Well, whenever anybody was leading up, as we got through the final series of preps, and people were saying, ugh, I invoke the John Asher moniker that there's no bad derbies.
There is no bad derby. There's no, and, you know, every derby winner is special. Some are more special than others, but every derby winner is special.
As was John.
We miss him, dear.
We will get the official Darren and Davis Rogers selections on Thursday.
So anticipated.
When the energy level ratchets up to a frenzy.
It'll be a buzz in here Thursday.
Yeah, it always is. It always is. Great to be here. And Darren, thanks as always.
Love your 2 weeks of coverage. I know as a listener of your show, I know the fans truly appreciate the up close and personal visits with folks and the information on the scene. And so I thank you on behalf of all of them.
It is my absolute pleasure year after year to be here. And for the full fortnight this time around, as opposed to September, which was just we were all kind of
bizarre.
Yeah, we were all kind of walking around dazed, to be honest.
You didn't know what was going to happen.
No, literally. But it came off. It always does. And now we just need a little more weather cooperation from from the Derby gods.
It's keeping us on our toes. That's for sure. It's already melted, Steve.
You're an upstate
New Yorker. That wasn't 1.8 inches of overnight snow is not snow.
But it was enough. It was enough to be to realize I didn't have gloves or a snow shovel or my snow brush for the car. I love it. Let's take a break. The only one we're going to take this morning because Sid Fernando is going to join us next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And we'll start to do a little bit more pedigree with Sid toward Derby. And then we'll get his final official and always helpful thoughts next Wednesday. But we'll also get some of the sale information in. I wanted to mention a couple of horses a couple of sires that kind of lit up the board that you wouldn't have necessarily thought of going in. And then we'll talk to Bill Downs because we've got a pick five carryover at Indiana Grand. I'm going to hightail it up to Shelbyville. Going to get a little Shapiro's corned beef in too afterward on the way back. And we'll also talk to Seth Merrow Wednesday, 10 days out. Kentucky Derby 147. Live from Churchill Downs, brought to you by Healthnetics and Thoroughgraph and more. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.